This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And to get fired in with our exclusive discount code, head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bakashina! 2-0 to Aberdeen!
It is Madison!
Hello and welcome along to episode 168 of the ABZ Football Podcast. I'm Gary Scott. Joining me this week is Gavin J. Baxter. Gav, how are you?
Good, thank you. Rather tenderized after the post-victory celebratory pints with Messer Steele here. But yes, good. Happy to be here.
Good. And back in the fold before fucking off on holiday, it's Graham Steele. Graham, how are you? We've not seen you in a while, buddy.
I'm fine, thank you. Just had to school young Gavin and Matilda in the art of drinking, and it would appear that they did not fare well.
There we go. Indeed, Graham, are you able to satisfy Cam McWilliam that you are indeed safe and well?
I am. This is not an AI-generated version of me. I am safe and well.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. That's what
I appreciate the concern.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. It's always good when our regular listeners are showing that level of concern about us on an individual level. Lovely stuff. On this week's show, we're going to take a look back on the Dons' 1-0 win over St. John's on Saturday, which mathematically secured our SPFL Premiership status.
Where are Where are the party poppers? Where are they? Confetti cannon.
We'll check in with the young team, the Quines and our Loneys, and then we'll do a brief preview of next Sunday's trip to Hibs, because let's be honest, who really gives a shit?
Not me.
But first, Aberdeen 1, St. Johnstone 0, Saturday, the 4th of May, 2024, at Pittodrie Stadium in the Cinch. And in a season of absurdity, it was a moment of concern for all connected with the club when news broke late on Saturday morning that interim coach Peter Leaven had been forced into hospital for an emergency operation on Friday evening, which meant Craig Sampson, flanked by Scott Anderson, Johnny Hayes and Stuart Duff, took proceedings at Pittodrie. All the very best to Peter Leaven in his recovery. Although from the press release of the press statement, it sounds as though maybe hopefully not anything too serious. He's expected to be back at Cormac Park this week. But who says managing Aberdeen is bad for your health? And yes, for all the killjoys out there, we know that Scott Anderson officially took charge. But for the sake of a laugh, not much else is going to be put down to Craig Sampson. Okay? Deal with it. No changes to the start. Mick, deal with it. No changes to the starting 11 from the win over Motherwell last time. At Graeme Shinney returning from suspension but having to make do with a place on the bench. Now, let's be honest, this wasn't much of a first half to write home about. Gartenman should have scored from a free header on 22 minutes even, after a fine junior Hoylett corner before the Dane turned golden ire a couple of minutes later, somehow managing to get himself back on the line to head over a Kim Pioka effort after he turned Angus McDonald into knots. Miofsky with a scyther on goal before somewhere on the Valaris 92 jack-up, Scott Severin got a surprise erection when Andy Considine broke out a vintage knee back to goalkeeper Mitov as the game meandered towards halftime. Just about time, though, for Stefan Gartenman to produce a surprise, an astonishing miss. Hoylett with a superb free kick that crashed off the bar with Mitov stranded. Gartenman first to react, but somehow managed to get his feet in a mess and only managed to prod the ball back into the hands of the Bulgarian stopper. Halftime, 0-0. A much, much brighter start to that second half. Certainly a Pep-influenced team talk by Senor Sampson doing the trick. Devlin McGrath, McDonald and Miofsky all going close or having efforts turned away in the opening 15 minutes before the Dons finally made the breakthrough on 68 minutes. Devlin doing well to drive into the box, and he was clipped by Andy Considine, giving away penalties at Pittodrie. Some things just never change. And after a lengthy VAR check, penalty awarded, Miofsky sent Mitov the wrong way for his 25th goal of the campaign. And the Dons, well on top for the rest of the game. Miofsky with two great chances to make it a hat-trick. Shinny, Duke and Phillips all coming on as the game died out for Barron, Polvara and Clarkson. But that was that. The Dons make it six games unbeaten in league. Two wins on the spin, five clean sheets in our last six. And as we touched on at the start of the show, those 3 points make it absolutely certain from a mathematical perspective that we are safe from being dragged into that relegation playoff spot. The visitors, however, with County's late winner in Dingwall, now dropping into the dreaded 11th place in the league. On the data front, possession 65% to 35%, shots 15 to 12, shots on target 6 to 5, expected goals 3.34 for the Dons, 0.99 for the visitors. So, gents and Graham, let's come at you first because it feels like you've been out of practice. It's going to be hard to get, you know, too much or get too worked up about that one. Quite probably the most routine win we've generated this season.
Yeah, it's pretty standard fare for Aberdeen St. Johnstone, wasn't it? In so much as it wasn't particularly exciting. Don't really think, I mean, over the course of the 90 minutes, probably arguable that we could have scored more. But then St. Johnstone had a couple of decent chances while you mentioned the Gartnerman block. So I think overall, it just felt like it was going to come down to a moment of quality, which I do think we, you know, if that was going to happen, it was going to come from Aberdeen. We do have the better players, or someone making a mistake, and that kind of proved to be the case. Decent bit of play from Devlin in terms of getting up and supporting and trying to drive into the box. De Keyser helping out his old club, which is always delightful. And then decent finish from Miofsky. But other than that, it never really felt like we were probably going to run away with it at any point. It was just a case of can we not do anything daft, and can we try and be the ones that capitalise on any errors? So we got there in the end. But I guess there's probably a little point in being critical at this stage in the season. When the season's been long gone for a long time, it's obviously not the manager that, you know, it's not Jimmy Tillman that's in charge. So this doesn't really represent anything like what hopefully we're going to see next season in terms of style, intensity, probably even personnel, to be honest. So I think we just rumble along for the next three games, don't we? Try and pick up some additional points and just get
wrap this motherfucker up.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, as soon as.
Gav, in terms of starting 11, surprised that Graham Shinney didn't come back straight in?
A tiny bit, just because it's felt for the longest time that Graham Shinney's like the first name on the team sheet, regardless of his form or the opposition we're up against. But I think, you know, we talked at length about how well Conor Barron, Dante Polvara, and, you know, maybe not quite so much Leighton Clarkson, but like the trio has worked pretty well in recent weeks without Graham Shinney. And it's a game against an opposition who are probably not going to necessarily try and be on the front foot and take the game to us, rather sit back and try and hit us on the counter-attack. So to have that kind of proactive attacking approach of three, you know, creative players in the midfield, all with the ability to get stuck in if need be, but be more about focusing on the strengths of Aberdeen and taking the game to St. Johnstone, it was a bit of a surprise, but it was not an unpleasant surprise.
Game of two halves, really, wasn't it? I mean, first half, we were comfortable. We were knocking the ball about fine enough, but we weren't particularly threatening, it's fair to say. It was a game in that first 45 that didn't really feel like it was going anywhere.
It felt like very standard Aberdeen St. Johnstone, as Graham mentioned. Even in thinking that, you know, we did play some nice stuff, it was kind of similar to the Motherwell game of some good build-up and then maybe not picking the right final pass or trying to play a little bit too much. Even in saying that, you're still talking about what Stefan Gartnerman free header at the corner that she should score. Junior Hoyle hits the bar from the free kick. Gartnerman should score the rebound. You know, Miofsky has a decent chance. I think the ball just bobbles a little bit before it comes to him, and that maybe makes him check his stride. but we still created chances. And I thought, barring that one moment where Kipioka kind of gets to square up McDonald and Garman come away with an incredible goal line clearance, that we'd neutralized any kind of threat they posed on the counter-attack with the ball over the top. Another, much like Motherwell, you know, two teams felt like they were going through the motions. No real intensity as such. But I did think we played some good stuff in it. And I was a little bit surprised in a way to see how lacking in urgency St. Johnstone were, giving their predicament.
Yeah, we'll come to talk about St. Johnstone a little bit in a minute or two. Second half, Graham looked like a different beast altogether, it's fair to say. We really got onto the front foot early doors, and in that opening 15 minutes, we probably could have had two or three goals, and that wouldn't have been against the run of play. And then we finally get the pressure finally pays off with a penalty award, thanks to Senior Considine doing his bit for his old team. And no real doubt, I don't think, that Miowski was going to stick that one away.
Yeah, I think that's all fair enough. As the game, we got through the first half, and probably there was that spell in the second half, and when nothing had really come of it, thinking, well, we don't really look like we're in danger, but is this just going to be one of these games where we can't find the breakthrough either? Because I was a bit surprised. Well, was I surprised? Probably not. It's Levine. But you think the situation they're in, I thought they would have been a bit more adventurous, to be perfectly honest, because like, if you're not going to roll the dice at that stage, what's he hoping for? Just to trundle along and, well, I mean, I guess his plan's kind of backfired now that they are now actually in that 11th and County have the momentum behind them. So, yeah, but after that sort of first 10, 15 minutes, there was a bit of me thinking, is this just going to be one of these days where we just don't get over the line? But once the penalty was given, I was fairly confident that Miowski was going to put the ball into the back of the net. And then after that, I actually thought we would have gone on, probably got another one. I thought we would have then, you know, at that point, we'd have been absolutely out of sight. Because even after going 1-0 down, didn't really see much, if anything, from St. Johnstone that suggested they thought or they even wanted to try and get back into the game, which I really can't understand, given the state they're in. There's one thing to maybe come up and start the game thinking, let's try and get a point out of it. Okay, fine. But at the point where that is out of the window, and there was still a decent enough amount of time for them to try and get something, I just don't understand why they didn't. But I guess that's their problem, not ours. So
I mean, just insert sound bite from Sport Sound of Michael Stewart.
Well,
I just think the issue is he's just not a very good manager.
I was going to talk about this later on, but maybe it's a good time to talk about it now. I mean, I was really surprised. Well, I don't know why I was surprised given who's in charge, but I was very surprised that St. Johnstone just never really tried to force things at all. And as you say, given their predicament, you think they'd want to come up here and get the 3 points, but it just never felt like Levine even wanted to win the game. Yes, they did it.
I didn't really see much. And fuck, when he brings on Stevie May, it's like, whoa, that's all right. Breathe a sigh of relief. There's a man who does not want to win a game of football. So really, really strange.
I thought he would go with a very almost identical game plan to what he implemented when they beat us 2-0 earlier in the season with Kipioka and I think Sidibe up front.
Clark played up front that day. It was the same starting lineup.
Oh, was it? So Sidibe came on maybe a little bit earlier in the second half and they just stretched us like fuck. Yeah. I thought that would be the way they would go about it. But I thought, like, yeah, generally speaking, we dealt with what little threat they posed pretty well. McDonald and Garman have made a pretty solid centre-back pairing in the time they've been together. And I know they have one clear off the line by Garman, but yeah, I can't think of Kel Roos having anything to do of note, either saves or crosses. So yeah, a team that feel to me polar opposite to Ross County. You know, Ross County are digging in, getting results, got momentum, and St. Johnstone looks just out of ideas, out of quality and out of effort. I think they're in real danger.
Yeah, County's home form since Don Cowie's gone in is exceptional. They haven't lost a game, I don't think, at home so far. They've got us and Motherwell, I think, are their last two home games that they have. So, and they will feel confident, I think, about taking points off of both those teams as well, I would imagine, going out the running. Back onto our own piece, Miowski should, if you're being realistic about it, had at least one more, probably actually a hat-trick. But that does take him up to 25 goals and 50 appearances this season. A 1-2 ratio in a side that, as we've spoken about so much this season, doesn't create a whole lot, is very, very special. And it does feel as though we're now into the swan song of the Bojan Miowski era at Aberdeen. Probably one final home game to come against Livingston. Just feels a real shame that we've had this talent here and we've just not been able to make the most of it.
No, we haven't. And without him, you shudder to think how our season could have in fact turned out. Incredible player, incredible goal return. I know that's across all competitions, but 37 goals we've scored in the league, and I'm sure that he's got the lion's share of that. I think I would share your sentiment that we've maybe just not quite got the most out of it as far as finishing higher up the league and possibly even giving him more opportunities to score even more goals. I think that chance he gets where, McGrath, this is one of these games where as a casual observer, you might ask how old is the number four for St. Johnstone, and someone will reply, 102. Because it was kind of painful to watch Andrew Constein in some ways when McGrath burned past him. And I think Bojan's just a little bit too casual. Doesn't understand that there's a St. Johnstone player closing in. And he has a great chance from that header from the Clarkson free kick. So yeah, he probably could have scored three, even that chance in the first half. He's good enough to take that. So not quite firing on all cylinders, but what a player, and no doubt about it in my mind that he was going to score that penalty and secure us another 3 points.
Dante Povara, Graham, I thought again showed why I think he's developing into a solid hand at SPFL Premiership level, and I'd love to see him personally get a bit more game time. Certainly, we're starting to see more and more out of Dante as the weeks go by. Plays with his head up all the time, and with that little bit more experience, if he can just kind of sort out that weight of pass, which will come as well, I'm pretty certain. I think there is a real player in there, and we've maligned on a lot of occasions the scouting setup and everything that's happened in the last few seasons, but credit where credit is due on this one, I think, on Povara, that for what we will have put on out for him from an outlay perspective, it looks like we're going to now finally reap the rewards of this over the next couple of seasons, hopefully.
I certainly hope so. I think there's definitely enough that I have seen anyway to say that he's capable of playing on a regular basis next season. He's not without fault, but then none of them are. But I think in general, I quite like what he's trying to do. He's got a decent build to him. Sometimes I think he would benefit from being a little bit more aggressive. I think he should use his body a little bit better. But I think he's got decent ability and does seem to have an eye for a pass, and those things don't always come off. But like you say, maybe just that extra game time and he starts to find his range a little bit better, or even just playing more, he's maybe then a bit more in tune with who likes to make a certain type of run, or if we're under the cosh, who's just going to be making that run up the wing, so we can just put the ball in a bit of space, knowing that someone will be after it and try and buy us a bit of time. But definitely seen enough of him this season to suggest that he's been certainly worth the gamble from a transfer point of view, and let's hope next season we kind of find out what he's all about, because maybe he's been put in different roles maybe throughout the course of the season, so it'll be good to find out where do we see him actually long term, because I think there's a bit of work to be done in the squad, but I actually don't think he should be out or playing less. I'd be quite happy to see him on a regular basis next season.
What I really enjoyed about him on Saturday was in the first half, when I think sometimes you forget, he's not gangly, but he's tall, so he can reach balls that you maybe don't think he can, and then I think he wins about three or four 50-50s in a row. So I think he is growing into the physical aspect of the game that would be completely new in comparison to college soccer in America. He stood up very well to the challenge of Dan Phillips. And the other thing I like about him is just he's prepared to take risks to try and get things going. And sometimes it doesn't pay off, but when it does, it's fantastic. So I really hope that next season he becomes an invaluable part of the team. And Jimmy Tallien is not the kind of manager who's going to necessarily coach that out of him to be more playing the percentages, but rather keep doing what he's doing because he can create chances for us. And I think in time as well, he'll start to contribute goals. Very, very good player and well worth that 3-year contract extension, as I remember saying at the time.
Yes, absolutely. We'll go back and have a dig back into the archives for that one. In terms of his kind of midfield partners yesterday, a quieter game, it's fair to say, than the last couple from Clarkson and Conor Badd, and neither of them quite hitting the same levels that they did against certainly Celtic in particular. And, you know, Conor Badd also played pretty well against Motherwell, I thought, last week. Clarkson on occasion was, I don't know, just off it a little bit, I felt yesterday. Just some of his decision-making and passing just wasn't quite there, and kind of the same for Badd, I think.
I think that's fair. And I think when we talked with Graham about this after the game where, you know, Clarkson's had it's been a struggle, I think, this season for the most part for him. And things probably haven't worked out the way that he envisaged when he signed that 4-year permanent deal with us for a variety of reasons. The thing that I would say is that he never stops trying, and he's always trying to make things happen for the team, always looking for the ball, and maybe just trying a little bit too hard in certain instances. I think it's worth remembering that also is that even though he's come from Liverpool, you know, big club, a big time transfer, a lot of expectation, he is still a pretty young man. And I'm sure the season's been hard for a more experienced person than he. So I think he's not become a bad player overnight. And I really do think that next season, if the manager can find whatever formula it is to get the most out of Leighton Clarkson, we'll see the player that we were so excited to sign on that permanent contract last summer. But yeah, I think he's just now, maybe he's one that needs to just get through this season and look forward to next year.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I thought he was pretty disappointing on Saturday, if I'm honest. Nothing he really tried came off, but he's not a bad player. It's just we almost need to watch the tapes of that first season and try and figure out what was different that allowed him to excel, and can we try and recreate that? You know, whether that's kind of making him the focal point of the team or getting maybe some players that complement him better next to him to try and free him up. I'm not quite sure what the answer is, but I feel like that's something that needs to be looked at for next season, given that he's under contract and he was excellent in his first year. Let's hope he'll have learned from this, but more importantly, let's hope the new man and everyone else can start to figure out a slightly better formula for getting Clarkson back into the team and playing well.
Absolutely. Junior Hoylett, I thought, looked a decent threat for the majority of the game yesterday. Do you think we're going to see a Junior Hoylett goal before the end of the season?
Nope. I agree.
I was convinced I did.
I don't see it.
I did see a Junior Hoylett goal from where we were, and you know, couldn't quite make out what Stephen Gartman did. I thought he was very good, and you know, it makes a huge difference the fact that he's now capable of playing a full 90 minutes. Now he's got his fitness up. It's a shame that it's taken until the remaining few games of the season for that to happen. Yeah, very good player. I think I still maintain my view about what we spoke about regarding him perhaps being here next season. I'm not sure if it's the best fit for any party. But yeah, he's done well. Constant threat down that left side, and hopefully, yeah, continues that way, because a winger that can deliver crosses like that will be invaluable, especially for a striker like Bojanowski.
Yeah, definitely. Stephen Gartman, we've talked a lot about him in the last few episodes, it feels like. And the general consensus, Graham, you've not been here, so we can get your thoughts on this. Gav certainly wasn't overly bothered about retaining him next season, but I thought he was excellent again on Saturday. And should we be rethinking that possibly now? His performances in the last 3 or 4 weeks have been very, very good.
I think he's all right, but I don't really know much about how the new manager wants to play. I mean, just because he's played away with his current team might not be how he thinks it's going to have to work out at Aberdeen. So whether he would see Gartman or not, but I wouldn't really be that up nor down either way, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if we don't do anything about it and he goes back to his club, fine. He's had some pretty good games for us and he's had some not so good games. And if we did sign him, then I'd be fine with that, because I would be hoping that means the new manager actually wants him and you know, is confident that yes, he fits in with what he's trying to achieve. Therefore, that's good. The new manager has got his man. But I don't think he's so good that you can't get another Gartman.
Which makes sense. I mean, Tillin may be relatively familiar with Gartman. I think Elfsborg and Midtjylland played each other in a couple of games not all that long ago, in like some friendly tournaments before. So he might be quite familiar with him. It will be interesting to see just what Tillin makes of Gartman and whether there is an opportunity for us even to think about bringing him back in. I mean, I must admit, I was probably in the same place as Gav has been the last few weeks, where I was like, I think we've seen too much of the bad stuff from Gartman over the course of the season to outweigh that. But I must admit, I probably came away on Saturday afternoon thinking, you know what, if we could get him back in, then maybe that'd be worthwhile. But Gav, is also the Angus McDonald factor, do you think, playing alongside him?
Yes. It's amazing what playing your best centre-back does for your clean sheet record. I think I can't mind who it was. Might have been Martin Ingram on Twitter pointed out that since they have played together 750 minutes or so since the Motherwell 3-0, the point where we were 3-0 down in Motherwell and Angus came on.
Yeah.
So they've conceded like 5 goals, 3 of which have been penalties, neither of whom have conceded any. So they have formed a very, very good understanding. I think Angus kind of leading it, bringing that calm to the back line makes a huge difference to everyone. But what I would say is like Stefan Gartman, the clearance off the line is incredible, obviously. And even with the ball, I thought he was showing a little bit more urgency, and a little bit more intent.
And he wasn't just shelling up the pitch. He was trying to keep on the deck and try to make things happen rather than just hoofing up the park.
No, and I think I give credit to Peter Leaven for that, because that's been a directive I've seen from the team for the last couple of weeks now. It's been much more about trying to build a play up through the channels rather than that aimless shelling to Boya Miowski. So I think at this point it comes down to, Jimmy Tillin's view. Is it going to be Rubizic coming back in, guaranteed starter next season? If that's the case, I'm not sure him and Garmin work out as a great pairing. What are these at terms with Midtjylland? Do you want to retain too much of this team that have over the piece underperformed? It's a difficult decision for him to make, and I'm intrigued. But yeah, he's definitely come on to a game since he's been partnered with Angus McDonald.
There's definitely part of me would like to see McDonald play alongside Rubizic in terms of just, we've seen McDonald now with, and McDonald has his limitations. Let's not try and pretend he's, the second coming of Paolo Maldini. He absolutely has his limitations and he's cost us a couple of goals since he's been back in the team as well. But what we have seen with Angus McDonald last season with Matty Pollock, who was obviously a young and experienced defender, we've seen it now with Stefan Gartman, who has a lot more experience, but I think needed his confidence boosted and needed somebody alongside him just to kind of help, talk him through things a little bit. We've seen McDonald's influence bear fruit. And I do wonder if Rubizic would be a player who would really benefit from getting a season next to Angus McDonald. And is that your first choice pairing next season, do you think?
I think Rubizic is going to, I would imagine he will get played on the basis that he's under contract. We've probably been gambling on him being one that we can make a couple of quid out of. So I'd expect there to be, I don't know if pressure is the right word. I imagine someone will be having a word with Jimmy saying, wouldn't it be good if this guy played? We'll see how that plays out in terms of he's had a decent break. He has had the benefit of some experience. But I do think there's something around having a more composed player next to you. And that seems to be what McDonald has brought to the team. You're right, he's not infallible either. But the facts don't really lie, do they? The clean sheets that we've been putting together when we just haven't been doing that at all throughout the course of the season. Maybe there is something in that combination, but it's just, I guess it's difficult to know because you don't really know, even though they're under contract, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be here come the start of the season.
I kind of said at the start of the kind of talking points here just now that it's about as routine a win as I think we've had all season, and whilst it wasn't particularly exciting stuff in the first half in particular, that's just what we've been missing, it feels like, in the last few seasons on that consistent level, is just that non-fussy routine wins being ground out when you need to win games of football. That's ultimately how you get up this league table and how you progress in the Scottish game a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think for a number of years, it's probably those stuffy games that have maybe cost us, where we've just failed to break a team down or we've done something silly at the end. So you're right, it wasn't particularly exciting, but it never really felt like we were going to lose that game. And the longer the game goes on and they didn't try and actually come out and get us, we've got better players than they do. Although there's a couple of guys maybe not, like picked on Clarkson, for example, saying it's not really been a vintage season based on what we saw first time round. But he's an example of one where he's still capable of doing something. Miovsky's always capable of doing something. Duke, it's been a really disappointing season, in my opinion, for him. But he comes on, he can still do that. I mean, you look through our team, it's probably a handful of players where you think, well, if they're playing particularly well or not, I think there's enough in that team that there's still the possibility that someone can do something on their own or we can click. I personally didn't really see much of that in the St. Johnstone team. They didn't really look like they were going to do anything. Didn't really look like they were going to hurt us. I know Gartman had to clear off the line, but in any game, you're always going to ship a couple of chances. But in general, it didn't really look like they were capable of grabbing a hold of that game and really putting us under pressure for any period of time. So, yeah, it was good just to... These are the types of games where you, like we say at the beginning of every season, if you're going to finish anywhere near the top end of the table, you need to be beating St. Johnstone, you know, three times, and then you shouldn't be in the split with them. These are the games that, you know, most teams are going to beat them that you'd be competing with. So Saturday was a classic example of a game that really should just be, just get the job done.
But there we have it, chaps. I mean, Craig Sampson with a 100% win percentage as Aberdeen boss. And he's generated in one solitary game more points than Neil Warnock accumulated in his time here. So maybe the solution's been in the door the whole time.
What you're saying is we should have parked that dump truck full of money we gave to Neil Warnock at Craig Sampson's door.
Possibly. Who knows? I mean, jokes aside, we touched on it the other week, didn't we, about the fact that what has now transpired since Neil Warnock exited the stage right has been, I don't want to call it nothing short of remarkable. We're beating teams and keeping clean sheets against teams who I think we should be beating and keeping clean sheets against the majority of the time anyway. But from where we were, Graham, in the dying days of the Neil Warnock era, it's been quite a remarkable turnaround from Peter Leaven and co, and they deserve a lot of credit for that.
What were the lively days of the Neil Warnock era?
When he got to manage at Ibrox. Did you hear him on that?
For him, podcast? Anyway.
Did you hear about on that podcast this week?
Which podcast?
Sam Allardyce has a podcast called No Tippy Tappy Football.
Sam Allardyce does not have a podcast.
Yeah, he does. And he was basically...
Do you have to drink a pint of wine before you can come on?
He basically admitted that he almost only took the job because, you know, so Aberdeen, good club, blah, blah, blah. And then he basically admitted that he rushed up here because he wanted to manage at Ibrox.
Well, he admitted that in his first press conference.
Yeah, I know, but it was just when you hear it in the way he said it, you're just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, what the... How did we let ourselves get into this situation? Yeah.
Insert Michael Stewart sound clip from Sports Sound about the Aberdeen board.
Yeah, indeed.
Just saying, how right was I?
You were, Graham.
And I'm still being right. Not a day goes by and I am less right.
I will give you this, Graham. You were absolutely 100%, 110% spot on about the Colin Wanker situation.
He's a fucking roaster.
He is a fucking roaster.
Oh, that's exactly. A good shout. Whoever, I can't remember. Remember when we did the live thing and McGrath had his Gavin board out. Gavin had his McGrath board out and someone suggested a roaster board. I can't remember who it was.
It would have been Bobby, I think, wouldn't it?
It's got to be something if we can rip his idea off for either tail end of this season or next season.
We'll bring in roaster board next year.
That would be excellent. Just on the leaving and everyone, obviously we've been having a wee laugh about Samsonite being in charge when obviously Anderson said Hayes and Duff, but actually for everyone behind the scenes who have now been running the first team for the last few games, I think it's a really, really good effort because, I mean, it's a relatively inexperienced group of people, I would say, certainly in terms of being a first team manager. But I think they've done a really good job in just navigating us away from the bottom end of the table. I can't imagine, well, it must have been a little bit weird for leaving, you know, so you get a game and then you get punted for this joker and then you get basically called back in to fix his mess. But to be fair to everyone, and I think the players as well, because it looks like they, you know, it must be a little bit difficult for them with the kind of down tools, maybe some of the guys that know they won't be here next season, but I haven't really seen that at all, and certainly not in the last few weeks. I know it's not always been particularly exciting to watch, but we have been getting the results, and it does look like the players are actually bothered, and they seem to have a decent amount of respect for Lever and everyone that's given them the direction. So from that point of view, I think he's done an excellent job, and that shouldn't really be underestimated, because can you imagine the pressure had we dropped an extra couple of points and you could be the guy that takes Aberdeen down?
Absolutely.
You might not recover from that.
100%. And I think, I mean, we spoke about the time with the trajectory we were on under Warnock from a points per game perspective saw us absolutely heading towards that playoff spot. Now, we probably would have got fortunate here in the sense that St. Johnstone have turned out to be absolute dug bait. So that wasn't going to be a problem. But you see the revival County have been on. There was a very strong chance we would have got dragged in this with St. Johnstone. And at that point, you're like, I'm not sure about character, where the team would have been at that point. And Leaving deserves a lot of credit. It's not been pretty a lot of the time. But to have steadied the ship in the way we have, and to have strung together the clean sheets that we suddenly have out of nowhere, considering how leaky we've been all season, they deserve a lot of credit for that. And I am really pleased to see Leaving will remain as part of the coaching staff as well for next season. I think it's well deserved, if nothing else. Speaking about next season really quickly, because we're in such a weird like limbo state right now where we're waiting for obviously Jimmy Tilleen to come in the door, which means we're all poring over the details of every single Elfsborg match at this moment in time as well. Quite a remarkable evening in Sweden today with Elfsborg thumping Malmo 3-1 to really try and get their kind of season back on track. But have you seen the stats?
I have.
So Elfsborg with 18% possession in this game. Malmo with, well, what's my maths? That's 82% possession.
81% more. Possession.
Malmo only managed 3 shots on goal with that.
So, what did they do? Just play it like Stephen Glass's team? Just basically
defense? I don't know. But I mean, I was talking to someone earlier today about this. I was like, it's a very interesting set of stats in the sense of, if he can somehow replicate that type of result with against teams who are going to hold the ball a lot, and in this situation here, I'm talking about effective Rangers and Celtic, and still beat them despite the fact they have that level of possession, that's a lot. That brings a lot of excitement suddenly to the kind of table.
It's an extremely efficient use of your limited possession, isn't it?
It absolutely is. But it also brings the flip side question, which is the one I think we've all had a think about, I think, in recent weeks, about how Tilleen still is going to translate in Scotland, is how he's going to make it work though when teams give up ball and give up possession. And we saw play that at the weekend with St. John's. I think we were 65-35, which I'm pretty certain, I need to go back and double check, but I'm pretty certain that's the highest level of percentage we've had, level of possession we've had all season. It's going to be interesting, but that's a hell of a result for Elfsborg after their season looked like it was starting off in an incredibly rocky shape. Fair fucks Jimmy T.
Yeah, well, they got a win in midweek, didn't they, to kind of turn things back around, and that's also a great result against the league champions. What I would also just say on the flip side is that if he sets up a team, Aberdeen, like that up tawdry against Rangers, like, and we lose, he's in for some pain, as James Michael can testify to.
I guess so. We need to see about how he actually set up, though. We're assuming that he's set up in a very low block defence. I don't think that'll be the case. I suspect he's probably gone in the way that they've always gone. And
if he's gone gig and press,
team just can't keep the ball.
If he's got a gig and press and they've had less than 20% possession, maybe got some different issues there.
It could be what Graham's talking about, though, where they've allowed them to play in that kind of Stephen Glass style, where they're not hurting you, but you're not sitting back in a low
pass back,
position
back either. To wing, back to centre. Centre holds it.
Yeah.
Holds it.
And being very aggressive in your pass, in your press, up further up the pitch. It'd be interesting. I'm very keen to go and quickly dig at the highlights now, it's fair to say, to see how that transpired. But that's just mental when you see the... Imagine having 82% of the ball and only having 3 shots in 90 minutes.
You don't even know if the math checks out on that, does it?
I'm not entirely sure it does, but there we go. Jimmy T, what a guy. Let's see. Graham, actually, you've not been here since Jimmy T's appointment was made official, have you?
Nope.
Don't you
have? Have you seen us in the same room together?
No.
Well, just saying.
We have spoken, but I've realised you've not been on the show. Just thoughts about the Jimmy Tilleen piece.
I don't really know a great deal about him, and I've kind of chosen not to.
Apart from the fact he's a very handsome man.
I'll take your word for it. But the main reason is just because someone has a style or is good, bad, or indifferent in a league doesn't mean it's going to necessarily translate. So I've not really tried to get sort of too in-depth around what he has been doing, because he might not feel that he can replicate that here. But overall, it's much more exciting than the utter nonsense drops that comes out of the press. You know, when they prepare the usual lists and you've got Arsenal's making a case why Malky Mackay should get a fucking job, full stop, never mind why he should be the Aberdeen manager, stuff like that. I think my only thing here is it's pretty clear again that the club don't really know what they're trying to achieve or what they want, because we're kind of back to the Glass scenario where it's a bit more left field and out of the box.
It's a project.
So what I would say is I'm actually quite content with that, because I think we need to try and do something different. But I think it's critical that if they've kind of decided to go back to that thought process, if he doesn't work out, they need to continue with someone similar and continue with that sort of idea. Because all we're going to do, if it doesn't work out, is they'll panic and then just get someone generic and we have to change the squad and it's imbalanced. You know what I mean? It's almost like if you're going down this route, that's absolutely fine, but you have to stick with something similar should it not work out with Jimmy. But I think overall, I'm a lot more optimistic than I was probably as things dragged on. You think, maybe they are just going to go back to one of the usual suspects. And honestly, that might have been it for me.
I don't blame you. There was that moment where I was just like, if they genuinely put in somebody like, even like Michael O'Neill, I would have really struggled at that point.
Yep.
Because it's just like, what has he done to justify getting the Aberdeen job? And we spoke about it a lot. I think at this list, at least this time, we're picking up a manager who's on an upwards trajectory in his career, you know?
It certainly seems that way. I mean, this is probably going to make or break him.
I think it's certainly...
it's a gamble on both sides.
I think he's probably secure enough knowing that he'll get a gig back in Sweden if it goes Pete Tong here.
But even then,
but it may be
so what?
Dents his aspirations. It's going
to be tough for him to get out.
Yeah, but it may be dents his aspirations about England or anything like that. If this is a failure,
make it trickier for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, overall, it's interesting, and actually, hopefully, the little bit I do know about him, it seems to be that he's got an eye for a player, and he can sort of take them in, build a team out of that sort of philosophy, and then punt them on for some dollars as well. So yeah, that is kind of what we need to be doing, to be honest. So if we are maybe going to have a little bit of a presence in some markets that we haven't really tapped into,
yep,
hopefully that will give us an advantage over the teams that we would expect to be competing with. And obviously if we can unearth a couple of guys that are good for a season or two and they improve our team and we finish up in the league where we should be, and then we can turn them over for a bit of money and go again, then that would obviously be really, really good. So yeah, quite excited. I think, when is it? 1st of June? Is that his official?
1st of June is official start date, so we're not far away from it now. So
yep.
I'm available for Jimmy Tilleen lookalike appearances as required in the Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire area, if as need be. So it's all good. Hopefully his man management is better than Stephen Naismith's as well. Have you seen this from yesterday?
I have not. What has he been up to?
I've heard an alleged reporting of what he's been up to.
Yes, apparently. Do we need to put alleged? We put alleged for this.
It's your personal view, so you can do what you want.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I wasn't
folks
there at the time.
apparently there's the two Japanese players, isn't there, for Hearts, whose names completely escaped me now. Oda and...
I can't... But they were signed
Kagawa,
with a bit of fanfare,
Kagawa,
weren't they?
Oda and Kagawa. Apparently they... after they were beaten, obviously, at Parkhead on Saturday, they had hung back to talk to Kyogo, Maeda, and Hitate. And Naismith decided, fuck this, and just got on the team bus and fucking left them. And they had to get the train back to Edinburgh. What a way just to, like, probably just fucking torpedo team spirit after you've managed to secure third spot. Fucking cracking stuff. Lovely.
So I don't know if you've seen Lawrence Shankland's handball for the third goal.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. That is a guy who is like trying to deflect the ball as if it's like, you know, vaccine information.
Definitely. Right, let's go back quickly to Saturday. Top Don, let's just wrap this one up.
I'm not sure there's a standout player as such, but I think I came away thinking that was probably Junior Hewlett's best game for Aberdeen. So I'll say Junior Hewlett.
Graham?
Sponsorship.
I was going to say, whilst it was a reasonable performance and we got the job done, I'm not actually sure anyone, I know we mentioned Povara had a decent game, but I'm not actually sure anyone did anything particularly noteworthy, but I would agree that was a better all-round performance from Hoylett. I mean, Miofsky, he has some nice touches, obviously gets the penalty, but he should have had at least one other goal, so I'm not sure I could really say he was the man of the match. So I think I maybe agree with Gavin. If I had to pick someone, I'd probably just give it to Hoylett.
I'm going to give it to Stefan Gartenman. He's been much maligned. Thought he had a good game. And the goal, the save on the line is out of this world.
Yeah, that is excellent. Really, really good awareness to drop back. And then, okay, there's a bit of fortune that the guy puts the ball where he is. But just even just to not get it, end up in your own net.
Yeah, well, we've seen people do that this season, haven't we?
Certainly have. So, that was a good block.
And I'll definitely give him credit for, I know he misses the free kick, and the free kick opportunity after it comes back off the bar. And I don't really know how he does it, but I'm going to give him credit for the fact he was there. Like, he's the first one of our players to react to that. And if that's a central defender doing that, that's kind of a little bit concerning to a certain extent. But, if he just put his boots on the right feet, then he could have had at least one goal that he can. But there we go. Let's move on to Lone Watch. Not an awful lot here. Kieran Ngwenya played the full 90 minutes as Park Thistle were beaten 4-1 by Dundee United in the Champ on Friday evening. I mean, fucking hell, lads. So he's all had one job to do this season.
I know. They went 1-0 up as well, didn't they?
I know.
So I saw the score and I was chuckling to myself. I was like, that's kind of funny. And then just shat it. I was like, fucking idiots.
Absolutely.
Hell of a way to go into the playoffs.
Absolutely. Who else is in the playoffs? Is it Airdrie?
Raith Rovers and Airdrie.
Okay, lovely stuff. Airdrie in the Premiership next season. Can't wait.
Why the fuck not?
Dylan Lobben at 4 for an unused sub as 4 for beating 4-0 by Bonnie Rig Rose Athletic on Saturday afternoon, League 2. Alfie Stewart started, lasted to the hour mark as Peterhead beat Dumbarton 2-1 to confirm second place in League 2. As they head into the playoffs, Vicente Bijouin started, lasted to the 87th minute and scored again 4 goals in his last 4 as Emin beat Den Bosch 2-1 on Friday evening. Emin pushing themselves into playoff places at the death with one game to go. And then Papi Habib Gay played the full 90 minutes in a 1-1 draw with Hamkam in the Elite Syrian on Sunday. For the young team, after what was a heartbreaking 2-1 defeat to Sevco Youth in the Youth Cup final at Hampden in midweek, the young team had to dust themselves off. Stuart Duff was in charge at Cormac Park as he stepped into the breach vacated by Scott Anderson as the young team took on Queen's Park on Saturday lunchtime. Keen to keep the pressure up on Kilmarnock at the top of the league, and they did just that, albeit in testing circumstances. Fletcher Boyd giving the Dons the lead on the half hour before the Spiders rallied to go into the halftime break a goal up. Actually, what's a baby spider called? Are they spiderlings?
Well, someone called them spiderlings. I don't know if that's true, but I kind of like the name.
Let's go with that. The spiderlings rallied to go into the halftime break, a goal to the good. Goals then from Fraser Mackie and Fletcher Boyd, again sealing a turnaround win. 3 games to go, 1 game in hand. Next up, Celtic visit Cormac Park on Tuesday before it's a trip to Sevco on Friday. And then Celtic visit Cormac Park again on the 13th. So all the very best to the young team there. Let's hope they can try and get a little bit of silverware popped into the cupboard this season. And for the Quines, a thrilling 3-3 draw at home to Montrose at Pittodrie in midweek. Gav, you were there.
I was.
Enjoyed it?
Yep, very much so, yeah. Great entertainment. Real buzz about it. Main stand packed out with people of all ages. And yeah, I mean, it was by no means like the most vintage performance from the women that I've seen this season. Defensively, quite suspect. It felt perhaps like maybe the occasion got to one or two of the players. And to be fair, Montrose embraced the challenge and scored a couple of really good goals. Likewise, I mean, Hannah Ennis in the first half scores a 35-yard worldie at the top corner. Bailey Hutchison does what she does best, gets another goal. And yeah, a real opportunity there to inspire a section of the sport that perhaps the men are not able to do. And yeah, I think it was a tremendous success and hopefully shows there's an appetite for more women's games at Pittodrie in the coming years.
Absolutely.
Also discovered that our mother fucking loves a 50-50 tackle.
Well, did she go at the game?
Yeah, yeah.
She showed that a little bit today at the Wee Man's Festival as well. There was a lot of baying for blood on the touchlines from Mama Scott. And you're like, they're six. That's fine. Get out of the fuck
out. But he's looking around to see who's just shouted, fucking snap him.
Is that where you got the famous backheel tackle from?
Hey. It works occasionally. 76% of the time it works, 100% of the time. Then, of course, the news kind of came shortly afterwards that Clint Lancaster is going to be leaving the club at the end of the season. He obviously arrived last summer as the first full-time manager of the women's team. He's citing a desire to pursue opportunities closer to his family in England. This one does feel like a bit of a blow to the Quines, I think, because Clint has clearly done a really good job this season to date with one of the youngest squads in the league. Graham, you and I, we had the, you know, as the podcast we sponsor, Laura Holden, with the pleasure of sitting next to Laura during the kind of sponsors dinner not that long ago, and Laura had lots of positive things to say about Clint as well. So it does feel like a bit of a blow that he's deciding to move on after just a season.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, probably a little bit disappointed as well when I saw that news, just from a sort of selfish point of view, because I think it's quite a good job, and I think it's quite tough. One, it's probably quite tough to attract players when I don't actually know if they get paid or the expenses or anything, but most of them are probably coming here in the hope that it gets them maybe a better career move elsewhere. So he's done quite well to attract some players up to Aberdeen. I think he's done a pretty good job, all things considered, with the league campaign and the results and where they're going to finish up. So yeah, it's disappointing that he's going, because he does seem to have done quite a good job. So, you know, hopefully, but having said that, if he's here and his family's elsewhere, for example, I guess over the course of a year, that's going to start to probably weigh in your mind, and you've got to decide, can you bring them up? Are you here long term, or do you just accept that, you know, you need to find something closer to home? So hopefully, though, the club can kind of leverage a little bit of the success that I feel he's had with a view to trying to attract someone with a sort of similar calibre who is capable of obviously putting out a decent team and getting some results, but actually capable of attracting and encouraging some players to make the trip up to Aberdeen as well. So I guess we'll see how it plays out. But I think he's done a very good job. So I, you know, hope whatever he wants to do next, that he, you know, he gets a decent job.
Gav?
Yeah, likewise. A surprise announcement, given, you know, you've just had the game at Pittodrie. You can see the appetite for the women's game. You can see the progress that he has made with the team. This time last season, they're mounting kind of a late season charge to get themselves away from a potential relegation playoff situation. And now they're in a place where they're, you know, top of the bottom six. So massive progress. And like you say, with a young team, obviously he's had connections that's been able to get players from down south to Aberdeen for one reason or another. Some of them maybe haven't worked out, mainly because of injuries. Been very unlucky with that. So given that, and like I say, just how young the team is, everyone around the women's game in Aberdeen talks very, very highly of him. I imagine this means he's got a job lined up down the road. And I guess, like Graham just said there, if you're a player coming to Aberdeen, it's possibly with the view of using it as a stepping stone. Clint Lancaster may well have been of the same view. So hopefully with him sticking around until the end of the season, it gives the team and the club a chance to act and bring someone in that can fill his shoes and continue the progress, because there's a lot to work with and a lot to be excited about the Aberdeen women's team. So yeah, likewise, wish him all the best, and hopefully we'll get someone in who can carry on his work.
It was on Sunday another thriller for the Quines as well. They were 2-0 down at one point and then 3-1 down at another point. They were also down to 10 women after Maddie Finney was shown a straight red card as well, but a double from Bailey Hutchison and then Ailey Shore snatching a point on the road. So that's another good point gained on the road in SWPL1. Next up for them is Motherwell at home on the 12th.
We talk ad nauseam about Wojciechowski. That is 10 goals in 5 games for Bailey Hutchison. Top goal scorer in SWPL1. Incredible stuff.
Unreal. Absolutely fantastic. Again, with a team that doesn't create a huge amount of chances either, it's fair to say. So top stuff. Right, will that do us?
Yep, thank you.
Lovely stuff. Join us after break where we'll talk about Hibs away on Sunday. Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, why not place your order for one of their Dough & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the show. Before we move on to talk about Hibs on Sunday, just a quick shout out to those of you who continue to make your donations to the Beer and Coffee Fund. Thank you very much. If you'd like to continue to donate, please do. It helps us just keep things ticking along. ko-fi.com/ABZ football podcast. Link is in the description. So, Sunday, I'll be honest, I had loads to fucking do today, and this one is an absolute dead rubber. So, I've not really done a proper in-depth look at next Sunday's trip to Easter Road. It is a fifth
lazy
meeting.
Bastard.
I know, shocking. It is a fifth meeting between the sides this season. Hibs with two wins. There was the 2-2 drop at Audrey back in February, and then of course a solitary win for the Dandy Dons coming at Hampden in the League Cup semi-final. Easter Road's become a bit of a bogey ground for us in recent seasons. No wins in Leith since August 2020, a 1-0 win thanks to Lewis Ferguson penalty, our last victory there. Since then, it's just been one draw in our six visits. 5 defeats, including that 6-0 shellacking in January last season that finally saw Jim Goodwin depart over advertising hoarding in absolutely sensational scenes. On league duty, 146 games played between the sides of Easter Road, 48 wins for the Dons. That's a win percentage of 32%, 43 draws and 55 defeats. So it's actually quite an even spread there across the different permutations. 403 goals scored between the sides. That averages out at 2.76 per game. Of course, heavily boosted by those six that we shipped in that January game. Hibs coming into this one after a late defeat to Ross County in Dingle on Saturday, which just heaps the pressure back on to Nick Montgomery after what's been a pretty dismal campaign for the Hibs as well. They're, of course, also undertaking their own strategic football operations review, so let's see what happens there. They do have the third worst defence in the league, 54 conceded, but they have the third best attack, 48 scored. So if you're up for entertainment, Hibs are probably the team to go and watch. Danger man is Maizan Melida, who joined on loan from Hertha Berlin Sfai in January. The Comoros international with 9 goals and his 17 appearances for Hibs to date. And frankly, lads, I can't be arsed with the usual in-depth analysis of them. They score loads, they concede loads. They've had our number on pretty much every game we've played, other than in spells in that 2-2 draw at Pittodrie. Your thoughts on Sunday at Easter Road, when will it ever end, and your predictions?
It's a funny one because I think both sets of supporters are saying the exact same thing, and we'll happily take a 0-0 draw, maybe a handshake at the beginning, and we just call it quits.
Just a high card draw.
Having watched the kind of clips of the Hibs team standing awkwardly in front of the away support,
very funny,
very tokenistically applauding while just being given absolute dog's abuse for being utter fucking murder, in scenes very reminiscent to earlier in the season, their first game of the season, when they get beat, 1-0 by that Andorran mob or whatever, and Lee Johnson's giving it the proper Kelroos.
That was this down season. That feels like it was about 3 seasons ago.
Aye.
How long has this season been?
I've had Neil Warnock, Derek Adams, and Lee Johnson in 1 year. We've been spoilt with absolute roasters in the Scottish Premiership. I think what you say there, like, they've had our number in terms of, yeah, the results they have. But I mean, the victory for them, the 2-0 win when Fish scores and Vente scores, I think it was. We played well that day, and it was a David Marshall kind of inspired performance that saved them. Bojmovski again could have come away with a hat trick there. So there's been instances, been times where we played not bad against them and just haven't quite got the rub of the green. So I feel like we're coming into this game in a better state than Hibs. When they secured that investment in January and they started bringing in a few players, I did think that could possibly be a real boost to them and they could maybe even climb the table. So to see how their season has unfolded, it's very, very Hibs, and that's satisfying to watch as an Aberdeen fan. I think we can go down with a level of confidence. I think they're just waiting for the season to be finished, and we feel like we're in a good place and there's a real chance to go down there and, like you say, kind of maybe break that hoodoo we've developed Easter Road as of late.
Graham, on a scale of 1 to 10, how little do you care about this game?
You always care because it's Aberdeen and you want them to win. But
I mean, you're going out of the country to avoid it. So really?
Yeah, you're now at the point where, you know, we don't have to worry about really the result. It's not going to make any difference to where we end up in the table, really. Or rather, you're not going to end up in that 11th spot. So I think it's probably just an opportunity for some of the players, fringe players, or maybe some of the guys that know they're on their way out to hopefully just try and put in a decent performance and give the fans something. Because I'm sure there'll still be a pretty good Aberdeen attendance, as it almost always is for away games, kind of regardless of form. So from that point of view, I hope they give it a good go. And I think when you look at the fact that they score a lot, fine, but our defence is not as hilarious as it has been recently. That bit's a little bit better. So I'm less concerned from that point of view. There's definitely goals in our team, and the fact that they concede, and even just probably momentum-wise, feeling in the camp, things are probably a little bit better with Aberdeen. We've been on a reasonable run of form. Hibs not really going particularly well for them. So I think if we could go down there, if we can frustrate, or ideally if we can get a goal reasonably early, I think the home fans are going to get pretty frustrated and that will play into our hands.
Prediction then, chaps.
I am going to go out on a limb. We're going to maintain our clean sheet streak, and we're going to come away with a very satisfying 2-0 victory, both from Bojmovski, and I'm going to back him again. Dante's going to get his first domestic goal, and we're going to close in on St. Mirren for that the old points total.
The coveted European spot. Oh, wait, hang on. Graham?
2-0 Aberdeen.
Oh, fuck it. Let's go clean sweep. I don't think this has ever happened. 2-0 Aberdeen.
Yeah.
There we go. So get your money on Hibs.
Yes. Yes.
If anyone who's followed our betting tracker this season will attest to.
Oh, yeah. Alan, get your money on Hibs. Stonewall Aberdeen win. Yeah.
Meanwhile, so elsewhere good. In the league, it is Ross County at home to Motherwell and Livingston at home to St Johnston.
That would be a clash of the Titans.
One of the significant movement in the relegation playoff spaces.
I didn't want to say it on Saturday, but I was just like, I think I didn't want to say it because it's like the glass houses, stones argument, but I was like, can you imagine having to walk St Johnston every week?
Oof.
I mean, fucking hell. Hellfire! To quote a previous manager of ours. I mean,
it's pretty bleak. I mean, yeah.
So shit.
I feel like I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've watched Stevie May.
What about Neil Doncaster this weekend, Graham?
What about Neil Doncaster?
Just vibing, isn't he? Just loved him just chucking out names of broadcasters the other day in Sports Center, just about who might be interested in these additional games we've got to offer. But you're like, you're just throwing out names and like just hoping that that might happen. It's like, what are you actively trying to do to make this happen?
Just hoping that it might happen has got him a job that pays 300-400 grand a year. So I don't think the joke's on us.
Well, you might be. Well, no, the joke is on us. The joke's not on him.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So, hey, like, your man knows what he's. Oh, no, I can't even finish that sentence. He's on the board.
He's just, yeah, absolutely. And then he's talked as well that there's big interest in league sponsorship. But let's be honest, if it's not the cinch, are we interested?
Even then, this big interest, what does that actually bring?
Big interest on a loan that we have to pay somebody to sponsor us.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Is there another sponsor out there that can top the cinch? Like, genuinely, from a branding perspective?
I maintain my shout that Greggs would be a very appropriate sponsor.
The Greggs Premiership.
We've got our official alcoholic beverage of the league.
Glenn's Vodka.
Yeah. And I don't know, do they go well with steak bakes?
I don't know. Everything goes well with steak bakes.
Well, yeah. So that might be...
After a certain amount of vodka, everything goes with vodka.
I just love the idea about that, actually. Let's campaign for that. Let's make it happen. The Greggs Yum Yum S Scottish Premiership.
Yes.
And it'll be different products for each league.
And if they start selling them in the stadiums...
Oh, fucking cashback.
Yes. Although, to be fair, the steak and black pudding pie at the weekend was pretty good. So.
Pretty expensive, yeah.
If you were going to rank the Greggs products then from for Premiership down to League Two, what would they be?
Steak bake at the top, and then the rest of it's irrelevant.
Okay. So there's the SPFL.
Sausage, Scottish cheese, and steak. Bean melt is League Two for sure.
No, that's League Two?
Yeah.
Okay.
They haven't that.
That leaves us then with League One and the Championship. So,
sausage roll is your Championship.
I would have gone like a one of those stone cold chicken bakes for the Championship, but they have to be stone cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they've been there for ages. And they have to ask you the question as well about, do you want a warm one? Because if you've got a warm one, you need to wait like 30 minutes. Or you can just have a freezing cold one. I'll have the freezing cold one, thanks, mate.
And then when I ask if you want your mixture products in the same bag. You're like, never right, that. I'm going to live life on the edge here. I am mixing up my steak bake with my sausage roll. And okay. Yes, I want those bad boys touching each other in the bag, sweating together as I rush out the shop to demolish them.
So steak bake, Premiership, sausage, yep. Cheese and beans, League Two.
League Two.
Cold chicken bake, Championship. Which leaves us
that's
League
where
one.
We have a difference of opinion.
Oh, you want to go sausage roll for League One?
Yeah, but I appreciate... Okay, I voted 2-1, so I'll accept that.
No, I'll maybe go with it. Is the sausage roll just like, is the, just, you know, solid? Just,
we're talking the standard sausage roll, we're talking the vegan sausage roll.
I think we know I'm talking the standard one. As is the rest of the world.
Right, I'll agree to give way to my learned friend. So the sausage roll is the Championship, which leaves us League One then.
I mean, yeah, I'm happy with the chicken bake.
It has to be the cold one.
Yeah, lukewarm.
No, stone cold.
Just touching on lukewarm.
Just stone cold, straight in the fridge.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. There we go. I love it. I'll be up for that. The classified results getting read out by the man with the posh voice on the BBC.
Well, this next week we can rank their sweet products. Oh, that's just every side done.
Because we need content. Christ, we need content.
Well, a bit like Doncaster, we straws clutching at.
Yeah, exactly.
Here are all the products that could... represent the leagues.
There's DAZN. They are by volume the largest broadcaster in Europe. Aye, very good, Neil. Right. There's the WWE Network.
Netflix. Stream it.
Yeah, Netflix and Google probably are interested. No shit, Neil. It was when he also wheeled out, Amazon were unsuccessful in the English auction, so you never know. It's like...
Probably do.
All or nothing. Aberdeen series under Craig Sampson. Fucking make it happen. Let's go. Right.
He might be the brains of the operation. He's the one consistent part.
He's been the one consistent part, but a lot
don't
of
don't know
shit.
If that's the flex that you made out to be.
Yeah, but he wasn't being taken. No one was listening to him in the bad bits.
Also, I can't believe I forgot to mention earlier on, and honestly, we will now wrap up. This is totally just taking a right turn out of the gate. Well, not out of the gate. Very late on.
It's taken a right turn and we've stalled, hasn't it? We're just trundling along.
When Stuart Duff was doing his pull-on Welly celebration all those years ago, did you ever fathom that he would be part and parcel of a first team coaching setup?
I did not.
And bless him, Stuart was great value in our interview. I've got a lot of time for Stuart Duff. Great guy. But I would never have envisaged that this would have been a thing that would have happened. So fair fucks. Stick in, kids. You never know.
August, when the season kind of started properly, I did not expect I would see Johnny Hayes showing Graham Shinney the tactical plans on the bench. as he's away to go on. I would have loved to have been in proximity to that, given the strength of Johnny Hayes' Irish accent and voice recognition he was taking in from that conversation. Also, apart from don't just half someone for no reason.
Also, big fan of Craig Sampson pulling Conor Barron over for a chat.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, right. There we go. That'll do us, I think. Graham, enjoy your holiday, mate. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Say hello to Ryan Gold for us, though.
I will do.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the ABZ Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Please remember to like, subscribe, follow, whatever you do in your podcast with your choice. Let us know what your choice of Greg products would be to sponsor each of the individual leagues.
Or if you've got another idea for a sponsor of the league, hit us up.
It hits up. We need shit to talk about. It's fine. Join us next time for episode 169, where we'll look ahead to the final two games of the season as the relegated Livy Lions head for Pittodrie, and we make a potentially final pilgrimage to the Mallard as we take on Ross County on the final day of what has been a fucking truly wretched season. Look forward to seeing you then. Stanford. This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds.